Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Life.
Love.
And health.
Only the good die young. Well, so goes the fanciful statement. But yes, they still die. However, their estates continue to earn millions of dollars from their likenesses and intellectual property. So true of Jimi Hendrix, who died at age 27, part of the infamous Club 27, which includes Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, and the most recent inductee, Amy Winehouse. Had Jimmy lived, he'd be 70 years old. And, well, he's still rocking somewhere, especially between the pages of Becoming Jimi Hendrix, subtitled From Southern Crossroads to Psychedelic London, The Untold Story of a Musical Genius, co-authored by our next guest, Brad Schreiber, with Stephen Roby. By the way, you can find Becoming Jimi Hendrix at Amazon.com. I'm Christopher Springman, and Brad, thanks for joining us today on Life, Love, and Health.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much, Christopher.
70 years old. My, my, my.
I know. It makes us all feel older, doesn't it?
And probably look a little bit older, too. What do you think he'd be doing these days?
Well, you know, we did some research in Becoming Jimi Hendrix and talked about some of the last people he jammed with, did not record with per se, but jammed with. He was a very good friend of Miles Davis.
Ah.
Can you imagine what those two might have done together? Obviously, Miles went on to do Bitches Brew, which was a jazz rock fusion direction. Rahsaan Roland Kirk, the sax player who could play two or three saxes in his mouth at the same time.
Oh, yes, I remember he had huge cheeks, and they would puff out.
Exactly. I saw him live. He recorded with Jimmy. One of the fascinating things about Jimmy's eclecticism, I think, is that he loved all kinds of music. Dick Dale, remember the famous
Dick
circuit?
Dale and the Deltones, right.
There you go. Well, he went out to Pasadena at one point in the mid-60s just to study how Dick Dale did his quote-unquote power slides on guitar. He loved all kinds of music.
You know, it's interesting. Jimi Hendrix had the tune Foxy Lady featured in a Hewlett-Packard campaign, plus in the last year or so, released the new Winterland box set and two live DVD sets, all of which brought him about, and his estate, $9 million last year. Not bad.
When you consider that he passed away in 1970 and you realize his legacy, he's on Guitar Hero, the home video game. So a new generation is going, wow, Jimi Hendrix,
he's
my
cool.
Dad plays that stuff. And now I know why.
So now I can do his riffs.
Exactly.
How did Jimi Hendrix die? How did he exit this earth and become part of Club 27?
Well, he was in London staying with a girlfriend. And I believe that Jimi Hendrix died under such mysterious circumstances that there's a very strong forensic and circumstantial case that he was murdered.
Really?
He was found with red wine in his lungs as well as 9 Vesperax tablets, Vesperax being a popular sedative of the day. And the first physician who saw him in London claimed that he believed it must have been given to him forcibly. And his manager, Mike Jeffrey, was an extremely shady character, had been part of British intelligence, walked around with a loaded Beretta, and a lot of people in British rock were terrified of Mike Jeffries, and Jimmy was trying to get out of his contract. So you add the forensics of the red wine in the lungs and the circumstantial, and I think, unfortunately, he was taken out by a very unsavory manager.
Dead people tell no tales. Is the manager around?
No. Mike Jeffrey, ironically, got his just due. He was going to be flown back from the Canary Islands to London to stand trial for absconding with money from artists, and not just Jimmy. And he was in an air crash.
Wow. Our guest is Brad Schreiber, author of Becoming Jimi Hendrix, co-author of Becoming Jimi Hendrix, subtitled From Southern Crossroads to Psychedelic London, The Untold Story of a Musical Genius, who, were he alive, would be 70 years old now. What other interesting revelations did you feature in the book, Becoming Jimi Hendrix?
Well, there are two things that I think really stand out, and I know were never published in other books about Jimmy. One is that he was arrested at a civil rights demonstration in Nashville in 1962.
Now, what's so unique about that? There are a lot of folks who are involved in the civil rights movement.
It's true, but no one ever knew that Jimmy was involved. He kept race out of political discussions when he was interviewed, and he didn't talk about race. He talked in general about peace and transcendence. But he and Billy Cox, the bass player who later joined him, in one of his later bands, both of them got arrested because they couldn't tolerate the racism in Nashville in 1962 at the lunch counters. And that little tidbit was never known until we published it.
These were the bad old days of what we called Jim Crow.
That's right. The other discovery is a little more upbeat and happy. People always think about Jimi Hendrix setting his guitar on fire.
Yeah, those famous pictures.
That's right.
With lighter fluid, I think.
That's right.
He's on his knees.
Monterey, the famous coming out party when he returned back from London to be greeted rapturously.
What kind of guitar was that? Do you know?
I think he...
It was a Fender?
I think that he had the white Stratocaster at that time, which became his landmark.
Oh, there's so many rockers out there going, oh, God, what a waste of a great guitar, but
well,
a hell of a good picture.
He talked about sacrificing it. He knew what he was doing. But 1964, he was touring what was called the Chitlin' Circuit.
Yes.
Small clubs in the rural South, and Bobby Womack, the rhythm guitarist, was on that tour. And Jimmy would set his guitar on fire, but he only had one guitar.
Oh, no.
So he'd run backstage, smother out the fire, and then do it again the next night. And Bobby Womack's comment to him was, man, your guitar's looking like barbecue. But this was 64. This
right.
is well before people associated Jimmy with Monterey and setting his guitar on fire.
What else did you discover that, what do you know that our audience needs to know that you ran in becoming Jimi Hendrix?
I think that most people don't know that Jimmy had one of the hardest childhoods of anyone in the history of rock and roll. His mother died early. His father had to raise them. His father did not even have a high school education. He did manual labor with his father in Seattle. And sometimes they were so poor that Jimmy and his little brother Leon woke up in a house with no electricity and no food. And they would literally walk their neighborhood. And people knew their situation would say, hey, come on in here. Have you eaten today?
Oh, that's sweet.
That's how he was raised. And then, of course, he went into the military because he was caught joyriding for a second time in a car.
Oh, and the judge gave him an option, go to jail or go into the Army?
That was it. In those days, they gave you that choice. And he joined the 101st Airborne because he had a friend who had a really cool Screaming Eagles 101st Airborne patch.
Was he a good soldier, Brad?
No.
No.
No, he didn't want to be there, so... He was a terrible marksman. He missed bed check. And how shall we put this tastefully? He was caught abusing himself in the latrine.
Oh, my goodness.
It was written up by more than one officer. And he was amazingly discharged honorably. And that's when he started playing the South and learned his craft truly in Nashville.
Do you think his international perspective, which one gains by choice or chance in the military, helped him in terms of his view of the world?
You know, the interesting thing is he never talked about Vietnam, even though I believe that in his heart he was anti-war. But he had such a great, really undying respect for people who served in the military that he never really spoke about it in very specific terms. He avoided very specific political commentary about peace, war, Black Panthers, any of the hot issues that were going on in the late 60s.
Our guest is Brad Schreiber, author, co-author of Becoming Jimi Hendrix, subtitled From Southern Crossroads to Psychedelic London, The Untold Story of a Musical Genius. Brad, how can people find out more about you and your work? Because you're a pretty prolific author.
Well, thank you very much. I have no life except writing, apparently. I have my own website under my name, Brad Schreiber, S-C-H-R-E-I-B-E-R. And Jimmy is my sixth or seventh book. Something parallel to when we're talking about Jimmy and his demise, I did a book about the L.A. coroner called Death in Paradise. So there are a number of books there and some audio and video.
Thank you so much, Brad, for joining us today on Life, Love, and Health on Radio MD. I'm Christopher Springman.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you here in person.